Nearly forgot that. Nearly wasn't recorded. And that will be available on the website later on, the audio recording, that is. We're still working on getting the visual ones up. And if you want to change the view of what you're seeing, you take your cursor to the top right and you see something called speaker view or gallery view. So whatever it says means that's where it will take you, not where you are. So if it says speaker view, it means you're in gallery view. And if it says gallery view, it means you're in speaker view. Clear as clear as mud. So once again, there's a few more people joined since. Lovely warm welcome to you for this talk on why do we become moody. And actually, if there's anyone here for the first time, we'd really love to try and find out how people heard about us. So if you wouldn't mind putting something in the chat saying where you found out about us and where you're from, that would be wonderful. So, why do we become moody? Now, I don't know if anyone suffers from being moody sometimes, perhaps, because I can't see your faces. Well, only one, anyway. But of course, moodiness can strike anyone at any time. And just looking at my own experience, it can be a lovely sunny day like it is right now. So everything can be good and wonderful and great, and suddenly I see something, hear something, or just some wrong thought or feeling comes in my mind, some memory, and the mood changes. And so I think everyone's experienced that when you get into that kind of negative mood, then it's a spiral down. It attracts more negative feelings. And the thing with a bad mood is it spoils the time for yourself. And unless you can contain it to yourself, which few people can, then it can spoil the time for other people as well. And of course, if we allow that to continue, we can be an ongoing scenario. Anyway, that's just a little bit of a input from myself, which I feel is the my own personal interest in the topic. But we have with us, dialed in from none other than Newcastle. There we are. There is Sarah Kavanagh, who actually spent an awful lot of time down in the south. In staying, she used to be a key person in Brighton Centre, which anyone from this part of the woods will know, or part of the coast, as we should say, will know that Brighton's just 10 miles down the road. And we have a very close connection with Brighton Centre. She was there for many, many years, then went over to manage the what's called the inner space in Oxford City Centre. And did a wonderful task there of basically managing that and looking after people who are coming to discover more about spirituality. And then from there, she shot off back to the north, to the Newcastle, where she continues with actually is a pretty well lifelong profession, which is teaching. I can't remember the age, but I think it's the juniors. Is it juniors? But she'll tell you perhaps, juniors, right? Which I'm sure is a lot of fun. She's perfectly suited for teaching children. She's got such a lovely demeanor, so sweet, and really friendly and happy as well. And so I'd like to now pass over to Sarah to take you through this topic of why do we become moody? And hopefully, why, how can we not be? Which of course is the unspoken purpose of being on this talk today. But over to you, Sarah.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay still? Is that
Yep,
okay?
loud
Thumbs
and
up? Yeah,
clear.
okay, good. Well, thank you for inviting me to Worthing. Thank you,
You're
everybody.
very welcome.
I have very happy memories of being down there, walking by the sea, but also being in the retreat centre there. So I feel very much at home. Even though I am sitting in my physical home, I feel very much at home, flying down to Worthing in my mind. And I can see a few friends already online, Monica and Divya in there as well. So thank you for coming up and playing with me. So today's topic then, this thing about moodiness, and exactly as Mark said, really, it can strike at any time, and why is that? And I suppose I might assume that everyone on the forum today is looking at themselves, looking at their inner world, looking at their inner life, looking at their inner feelings, their emotions. They are taking some time out to reflect. I'm going to assume that's a little bit about everyone today. And so even though perhaps this moodiness strikes at any time, I think for myself, my own experience is that it strikes less. And as I've moved through my, let's call it spiritual journey or self-reflective life, it strikes less. And even if it strikes, I recover quickly, you know, like the athlete, if you like, when you're using all the right tools and you're training for something, you still get out of breath. If you're a runner, you still get out of breath, but you recover quickly. And one of the nice things about exploring these topics that I'm given as I move around the country and sometimes around the world is they always explore something for me and remind me of how far I've come or what I'm learning. So I suppose embedded in what I share today is my own learning, because in a sense I can only really share from my own experience, which is what I'll do today. But I suppose recognizing, first of all, you know, what is this thing we call moodiness? And I'll probably talk about or refer to the fluctuation in terms of the fluctuation of emotions. So if it's unpredictable or it's swinging or it's moving, I call that emotion. And for something which is more stable and reflective and calm and a bit measured, I call that feeling. So if I mention those two words today, that will be where I'm coming from. The emotions are the moody ones, and the feelings are the, let's take a step back and just soothe myself, those ones. And I was thinking about, again, Mark's phrase, moodiness strikes at any time. And sometimes we say, you know, I better be careful or I'll set someone's mood off. I'll set them off. So, of course, even in our language, there's always links or connotations, you know, inherent about whatever it is we're talking about, that moods are unpredictable, perhaps. And I will set someone off in the sense they aren't, I can't control them. I don't quite know what's happening about it. So that's fine. And perhaps even inherent within that is this idea that if someone is moody, then there is a reason. And I think we probably all get that perhaps behind that is that their needs are not being met. Or maybe there's a manipulation going on, and we'll explore this later. But nevertheless, I need to be careful. Perhaps I have to tread lightly. Maybe I have to hold my breath a bit because something's going to happen out here that will affect me. Or if it's the other way around, I am unleashing the force of my mood, and I am aware that, well, what's the phrase? We say other people are treading on eggshells. You know, so it's all the language about that. So even if we never unpacked it anymore, there is clearly an instinct about, there's a sort of force there, and whoever has that force coming at them, they would be treading lightly so as not to upset someone even more. So you know, definitely this idea of fluctuation and unpredictability. So maybe manipulation and maybe sort of swing factor, which is two labels I might have of moodiness. And I guess if I'm talking about my own moodiness, you know, only I will really ever know about it if I sit long enough to have a look. And I suppose, again, I put it to all of us that we are on this forum this afternoon because we do sometimes sit down and have a look and would like to maybe change something. And that's just finishing off this little introduction in terms of if my moodiness is due to manipulation, for example, to having another agenda, you know, then it's still because I'm feeling less. So even if it looks like I've got everything inside, if I'm manipulating, you know, if I'm needing something, it's because I'm feeling the lack of something, maybe self-worth. Otherwise, I wouldn't need to manipulate. I wouldn't need to become moody. I wouldn't need others to fulfill my needs. I'd feel I have friends and family who can love me and support me, and our relationships would be open and clear and loving, and there'd be no agenda. And I suppose even within that kind of language and description of the antithesis of moodiness, or the opposite of moodiness, is a sort of a world where maybe we can be like that, where there is a sense of openness and support. And is it possible that I could be like that with myself? Is it possible that I can be like that for you and you for me? So we'll also explore that, you know, what would I need for myself to be in a world that was like that? And yeah, that's really nice. So I suppose in the biggest scheme of things, my own experience and my own research and explorations has seen that there are all sorts of layers that make this thing called moodiness. And so in our wanderings today, we'll explore that. And in the spirit of empowerment and change and calm, we'll explore it without blame and without judgment, because only when I have the supportive environment can my spikes, highs and lows, soften and change and become just more restful and calmer and clearer. So today that's what we're exploring this in, without habit or judgment or blame. So I also feel that these spikes of high and low, these emotions that change all the time and are unpredictable, they are about lack of understanding. They are about not having clarity. And so today I hope that we can begin to understand and have some clarity.
Yeah.
And that's really for myself where I see I can change my habit or certain areas of my life. When I understand something, I can make a choice. When I have clarity, it means I perceive something maybe from three ways where I only ever perceived it from one way. And so our lives open up, our awareness of ourselves and our place in the world opens up. And so the choices I make open up, the choices I can make open up. And I think we'll explore later on, you know, why would I make those choices? Because for every choice I make about who I am and how I see myself and how I decide to behave, how I choose to think, you know, there are repercussions for all of that, are there not? So, one approach to say that I am moody, and I could say, and it's all of you that are making me moody. So that's, you know, that's maybe the most common, you know, it's your fault that I'm moody, and it's this situation that's making me moody. But if I sit long enough, I might come to the conclusion that actually it's how I am reacting to you. It's how I am reacting to the situation. And therefore, it's how I am. It is me that I can look at me. So it's me that has the habit of reacting like that. You know, so what is going on in me, really? And within that, I suppose I was looking at what is it external that influences me. And I take on those influences so deeply that they create these moods, that I express myself in this way, even though I might not feel good about it. I know that you don't feel good about it. So what are these influences that hit us so deeply, you know? So one of those influences, I suppose, is something I might say is the fact that influences are ever-changing and are unstable. And so it's this instability itself and this ever-changing dynamic itself, that of itself, has us jumping up and down, doesn't it? And so while some people might thrive on instability and things that are ever-changing, you know, we all do from time to time, we like the newness, we like the excitement, we like the spontaneity, the passion, the engagement, you know, all of that. But we also need some downtime. We need some reflective time. And I guess in the trade, we call it self-regulation. I need to sit back, step back, have some quiet. I don't know, you know, go running, play tennis, do a puzzle, read a book, sit quietly. Something that allows whatever's bubbling up around me, all of those influences, for them to sort of settle, you know? And if I never get that self-regulation time, if I never have the quiet or the making sense of situations or the conversations, then it just sits there and it keeps bubbling. And so you've got an energy dynamic which is constantly ongoing. And so, of course, I would be constantly ongoing. And another word for that would be reactive or moody. Another aspect of that, if there's too much information on the surface and nothing really of any depth. So there's lots of information coming in, but I haven't refined it. I haven't settled it. I haven't made sense of it. I never quite get things, you know. And I see this definitely in my work sometimes. You know, the pace of learning is so quick. And I am asked, and my students are asked, and I am one of those that ask my students. I ask them questions, and questions are asked of me, of new ideas, new processes, you know, and now it's another new one. Oh, and by the way, here's another new one. And I haven't had time to understand those questions. I haven't had time to understand them in the context of what I already know and how they sit with me. I haven't had time or space to process them, to reflect on that learning, to sort it out, to file it, to apply it. And so I'm asked to offer opinions about something I don't really know, be confident about. I don't know enough about it. So I'm sort of shooting from the hip. And then if someone challenges me, well, I'll just have to challenge them back, because anyway, I was not really sure in the first place. But you asked me, you know, can you recognize that? And I see that in the children that I ask. So this is a really interesting, sometimes a conflict of interest from my own approach to life, to that I am, of how I am asked to be in my professional life. So it's finding this balance of how do I deliver what I am asked to deliver in a way that does not spike these reactions and cause this frustration, aka moodiness, in me or in the students that I am asking myself, really. So in this state of flux or upheaval, you know, this is what's happening externally, changes all the time. And so I am asked to keep up with that. So there's no wonder if that's what's happening externally, that's what's happening internally. That would be right, wouldn't it? And of course, different people react in different ways. Some react outside of themselves. So, you know, there's the anger, frustration, the waving fist, the shouting out loud, the stomping out the room, all of that. And some stuff it in and explode or self-destruct. So there's different expressions of this thing we call moodiness, and I'm sure we've seen it in ourselves and in others. So either, you know, presenting itself as reactive or too quiet, maybe, you know, annoyed. Why are you asking me this? But I definitely see that on this theme, it's because I've had no time to process it. I've had no time to settle it. I've had no time to upskill myself. And so there is real frustration. And it's definitely your fault, because if you hadn't asked me in the first place, I wouldn't be feeling like this. So there's all of that cyclic thought that goes around. And I was, as you know, I was thinking about what I would share today, really. And I suppose what's very pertinent is, for the last several months, we have seen this pretty much in the whole of the human race. You know, over the last months, we've seen this whole flux. We are all in a state of flux. No one has solid information. So our friend, the coronavirus, you know, it's left us feeling vulnerable, unstable, unskilled. Nobody really knows how to deal with it, and everything that I did know, the world that I knew, the work that I knew, my children that I knew, my routine that I knew, I am unskilled now in sorting that out. So maybe, you know, over the months, I've started to get a sense of that. So things have settled down a little bit. And we just get to grips with that. And then something changes again. So new variables change, new rules change, new timetables change. And then off we go again in this state of flux internally. And again, loads of information coming in. How can I settle that down? And it's exhausting, right? Anyway, we know that when we're tired, we react more than we would if we were not. So it's quite a lot to hold all that information and that ever-changing information. And it feels like too much is being asked of us. And so we react. And of course, why would we not really? So that's just one short comment, given the time we have, I suppose, on these external influences, really. And maybe another area that I feel triggers moodiness is, it is linked to external influences, of course, but it's more about what's going on internally even more. So maybe I live in a world where I read about, or the media tells me about, or I have a sense of, I need to be in a certain way, you know, be like this, don't be like this. Or someone else has more than I and I have less. Or I'm feeling controlled, or I need to control. Or I set expectations for myself. I set my bar high and you better live up to them. Now, even I can't live up to them, but you better live up to them. And of course, everything crashes and burns because they are unrealistic, maybe. I want my perfect world where everyone is peaceful and I am peaceful. And everything is beautiful and I am beautiful. And I suppose in my explorations over the years, I suppose over the decades now, I have really come to see that, you know, we are, and we'll come to this also later on really, but we are conscious beings. We are, well, I don't know, you will have your own words maybe, soul, consciousness, spirit. And the qualities of that being, of that pure being, is of peace and beauty. So it is really this we are searching for. So our love of the perfect is because we are perfect. But of course, I live in a world externally which is not, and I have habits which are not. So I've come to sort of look at the intention, you know, when we push and push and push, and we make it, and consume. And the moodiness that comes when I do that is because deep in the soul there is this yearning, this longing for stability. If you are peaceful, then, I can be peaceful. If you would just sort that out, then I can be peaceful. And so can you, but really, I can. So our intentions are really the best intentions. But, do they come out all upside down, right? So we are influenced by beautiful things because we want beauty. We want to see beautiful things. And, you know, question to myself and to everyone, how much do I allow myself to listen to the media or to anybody else telling me about how my life should be or how my life could be, and how much do I take that on? Because the less I am of myself, the more I will take in what other people tell me about who I should be and how I should be and where I could be. And maybe this is related to another aspect of moodiness, which maybe is related to this feeling alone or lonely. And that's certainly something that's come up again, I guess, over the last months, you know, people feeling they are alone, there's no support, they are missing out, they are powerless. maybe there are expectations, it could be another way, it should be another way. And we can hear that language of moodiness coming in. But it's because another insight in my own exploration is that the soul, the human soul, we love meaning, we need meaning, we need to belong, and we need a sense of identity. And so my intention always with being with others, with being in the world, from a very sort of high consciousness perspective is to belong and to have meaning in my life and to have a solid, know my place in the world. But again, when I don't understand or things are too fast or things are too wide or things are too loud, how I access my meaning, how I access my identity, how I access my sense of belonging becomes really, really tangled up with other messages and deep habits. So definitely having a sense of self, having a deeper sense of self. And again, Mark very nicely at the beginning, you know, we're going to, maybe I'll spend another few minutes on this thing called moodiness, but actually the real juicy bit is how I get out of that. Maybe a last note on this thing we call moodiness, which I suppose I wanted to say the body, there's a sort of hormonal axis. You know, we talk about teenagers being moody. There's a hormonal element to that. Or maybe illness, where there is physical pain, where there is chemistry, you know, changing physiologically, the chemicals are changing in the body. So maybe that's a different story. Maybe that's more about finding a forum which is dealing with pain management and all of the side effects of pain, one of which I have no doubt would be this moodiness. So I'm mentioning that, but as an element of how, you know, why we might be moody, but also maybe we don't follow it up so much today. But I think one last thing I would say, even if it's a huge subject, but certainly today my own experience, is that is this sort of addiction or this deep habit to the adrenaline rush or the sense of drama that comes when we are moody. We are moody. And perhaps we get what we want quicker. You know, if I erupt like this or I say it like this, or I fluctuate, that'll keep them on their toes and I will get what I want. And we may not even be conscious of that. We just know I express my mood and they jump. So why would I change that? You know, question to the self and to everyone else. Why would I change if it gets me instant results? So I think for myself, you know, it wasn't really until I started my spiritual practice or my meditation practice or my reflective practice, I really started to realize and see these deeper habits. And part of it was sitting quietly and thinking, you know, that time at 3 o'clock this afternoon, there was a little bit of a hoo-ha and that didn't go so well. And I came out of it not feeling so pleased with myself. So what was going on? And now what was really going on? And so this willingness to sit and think about that, and with the best intention of not wanting that experience again. And so what can I do about it? Given that I cannot control you really, although I will try, but I cannot. So what do I want to do to change those emotions into a quiet feeling? And then probably the more that I was meditating, and then definitely these days, very much when I'm meditating, I'm absolutely acutely aware now of any contrast. The contrast of quiet and the contrast of noise, the contrast of stability and the contrast of jumping up and down, waving my finger, metaphorically or in reality. The contrast of letting things be, and the contrast of not being so wound up that I cannot let it be. or in the words of one famous comedian and actor, I couldn't let it lie. So noticing that contrast and just seeing how it worked and seeing the sort of swings and the fluctuation, if you like, and thinking, you know, I don't think I want that anymore. And it does not matter if I do not get my way. And it does not matter if I do not get my way now. And actually, that's quite nice. How do I feel if I do not go there? Oh, much better. What a relief. How do I feel if I do not wave my fist and make that loud noise and have people jumping up and down because they're frightened of me? Oh, actually, yeah, that's a much better choice. Let's go for that choice. So that's very nice, you know. So I think the more reflective we are, of course, and I'm probably speaking to the converted here, just going to a place which is a little bit further back emotionally, so that I can feel this calm and I can feel this soothing taking place. And now when I look at my lack or my sense of what is it that I need that I feel I'm not getting, hence the mood in the first place, that I would be a little bit more aware that actually there is no lack. It was just because I believed this, or there is no lack. But if I feel that I need something I'm not getting, then, you know, who could I ask about that? Is it information I need? Could I just ask? Maybe I don't ask because I don't want to look stupid. So I will put up with my own moodiness, my own sort of ego or arrogance, if you like, inverted arrogance, rather than ask for help. And I know for myself, this has been very much part of my journey of moodiness to moodiness, something. Can I park my ego and can I just ask for help? Can I read more? Oh, this is very nice. Can I read beautiful, uplifting texts? Can I ask questions of others who are already walking ahead of me on this path? Can I sit myself down quietly and, you know, lessen the things that I want to lessen and ameliorate or make more of the things that I know are really, really valuable? Actually, what that reminded me of this morning, so every morning, some of you I'm sure will know of this if you're familiar with the Lighthouse and Raj Yoga, teachings of the Lighthouse. Every morning we meditate, or the Raj Yoga practitioners, every morning we meditate together and or separately online. And we read some really uplifting, beautiful, ancient words of wisdom, which are absolutely relevant for modern times. And this morning's teaching started with, have elevated and pure thoughts for every soul. Have elevated and pure thoughts for every soul. And that would, of course, include myself. This is a very high place to get to, is it not? What a beautiful place to be, that my thoughts and my heart could be like this. I have elevated means a very high vibrational perception, a one of love, of kindness, of benevolence, of acceptance, of letting go, elevated meaning high thoughts. And pure thoughts for me are about, you know, can I just let that go? Can I give the benefit of the doubt? Can I let it be? Can I not blame? The sort of beautiful aspect of purity, you know, which just has no spike in it. So I share this today because I'm assuming that most people on the call, you know, have some kind of reflective practice, a spiritual life, and so would be exploring aspects of these thoughts. Have elevated and pure thoughts for every soul in the world, whatever they are doing. The first exploration would be of the self, would it not? Do I even have elevated thoughts? Do I even have my own self-respect? Because my moodiness comes when I don't have that. My moodiness comes when I don't understand. My moodiness comes when I haven't given myself enough time to soothe myself, to bed down an understanding. My moodiness comes when I don't have enough courage, or I don't feel strong enough perhaps to challenge someone. So if somebody says, do that, think that, do I just take it and simmer inside? Or do I say, you know, I love what you're saying and that's great for you, but I think for me, no, thank you. You know, do I have enough of my own honor to give regard and yet beautifully but firmly reject what is being asked of me? So I have noticed for myself when I don't do that and I have suppressed something in me, I've suppressed, and suppression, of course, is the opposite of elevation. So I fly free, I am free, I'm up here in those vibrations of peace and freedom and empowerment, gorgeous. Or I suppress and I'm down here in turmoil and confusion and frustration and all of that moodiness. So, I mean, I do remember in my own journey sort of waking up to this fact that I realized I had been formed by everyone around me. You know, I started meditating, I think I was 24, and the penny dropped that I had just taken on board everyone else's ideas. So again, we come back to this aspect of influence. You know, no blame. This is how we form society. My parents tell me this, my teachers tell me this, this tells me this, the world tells me this. So to find my own place, to understand that that is how I have been formed and this is where I might be now, but then to start peeling back those layers and which of those beliefs that I've taken on trigger fluctuation, moodiness in me. They don't make me that. They just trigger what I have not understood about myself. So I like this. Again, perhaps my profession, it's all about the learning. And in my spiritual life, it's all about the learning. So this is good. It's a very benevolent way of taking on life. It's just all about the learning. So that's good. So perhaps just a final part, if you like, that for me, my own practice of meditation, it is absolutely a form of meditation called Raja Yoga meditation. So that matches for me. Raja means king or highest or high. So this is the elevation, the high vibrational rate, the beautiful thoughts, the beauty, the peace, everything that I want and I get when I don't suppress. And yoga means linked or yoked or union. So I link to my highest thoughts, my thoughts of beauty, but I'm not looking outside for the beauty and therefore I'm not frustrated because I can't see it or I can't be that. But I'm looking internally for the beauty, the light, the kindness, whatever it is I can understand at the time that I start to meditate. So keeping an eye, actively studying, sitting down, investigating, a one-day retreat, some drawing, finding out who influences me and what beliefs and attitudes I have, what sets off these reactions. And then I understand. So then the jumpy up and down bit stops. And then let me go into this quiet space and ignite and actively build, rebuild, actively draw on and investigate and feed. You see all these words, empower. All of these beautiful things about who we really are, which is thinking, feeling beings of light and life. I am a thinking, feeling being of light and life. And inside me are huge qualities and potentials for stability and calm. And so instead of feeling suppressed, we begin to feel uplifted. Instead of feeling it's you and I can't be who I need to be when you're there, I just go inside and I be who I need to be, whether you are there or not. So the triggers may or may not still be there, but my response is very different. My understanding of myself and my place in the world is very different. My sense of meaning I get from an internal perspective, my sense of belonging, my sense of identity. All the things that I craved for out there, I crave for out there. And my moodiness is the reaction to not getting enough. You know, I can't consume enough. Give me more, give me more. No more, no more. Internally, I can create this whenever I like. So topping up, moving up, empowering, elevating, all of this very, very different dynamic going on inside. It's a very different life in that sense. I'm looking at all these boxes. I don't know all the faces, but I am going to stop there. I'm looking at the time. And I don't know whether Mark has some questions or there's any questions in the chat, if that's okay.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a lovely exploration of what is moodiness and understanding the key triggers to it and how to overcome it. And for me especially, it was about raising our self-respect. I think that's the thing that I particularly connected with. Now, if anyone's got any questions, now is your chance while we've got Sarah captivated before we release her back to Newcastle. So any questions, do put them in the chat. While you're thinking of any questions, I've got one for Sarah myself. And that is, you were saying about so when moodiness comes, often it's because there's no self-respect. We haven't given enough self-time for exploration. Not enough courage. I can never read my own writing. Not enough courage, especially when it comes to facing challenging people and what we have to do about it. Because obviously, if I really see or really accept or acknowledge what my conscience is telling me I need to do, and then when I accept that, it's now right in front of me rather than behind me. So when it's in front of me, now I need to have courage to exercise that. And of course, that can be a bit scary sometimes. So it seems the key, one of the keys anyway, is to raise our self-respect. So can you share a little bit more about kind of defining self-respect and how to shift into a state of self-respect?
Yes, great question. I think just on the bottom line, completely from a very reflective or spiritual or meditative perspective, whatever label we want to give it, is that it's my own understanding of myself. So I have been brought up in a world which looks at everything physically, which labels this body, the gender, the face, the color of the skin, how clever I am, the car I drive. And most of us, most of us pin our self-respect to all of those kinds of labels. And so when those things fluctuate, the car goes, my job goes, my body goes, all of those fluctuate, then my self-respect goes down. And so my own and yours and others perhaps on this forum, understanding really is that although I express those things around me, I am actually just an energy full of potential. So I am a point of light. I am light. And in that light is huge potential for peace and creativity and abundance and so many other things, right? So many qualities. And so in our meditation practice, I would be investigating those qualities. And I would begin to see over time, you know, I mean, I can share all these words. And I know for me at the beginning of my journey, they didn't really mean much. I could not access them. I had no sense of what they meant, really. They were words and I could intellectually understand the meaning of joy, let's say. But I had absolutely no sense of that thing called joy. I had no experience. What does that mean? You know, that's something that other, that's some, does anybody have that? And so I do feel it takes time to align myself to a different kind of language, i.e. a language of the spirit, of the soul, which is silence, which is peace. You know, the language itself is almost the doorway to the feelings I then have and those feelings of who I am. So when I meditate and I'm tapping into myself as light, and I begin to understand that. So there's a whole course about this identity of who I am. And in fact, if you haven't taken that course and you are interested in that, then, you know, reconnect with Mark and he will, well, actually any of the centers, Raja Yoga centers in the UK or the world. Because it is layers and layers of understanding that my self-respect is actually based on this element of who I am, which is, you know, nobody can get at and take away. It is not physical. But in order to connect to it, in order to expand it, in order to experience it, I need to go into it. I need to go into myself. And we'll do that actually at the end, a meditation at the end, and kickstart that process for some, or maybe add to it a little bit for others. Mm-hmm. But definitely, if my self-respect, in summary, if my self-respect is based on anything that can come and go, then I am doomed.
And a befitting finale of that answer.
Black and white, black and white.
Doomed. Oh yeah, I can certainly relate with that. So yeah, thank you for sharing on that. Lovely answer. So, we still work on our spiritual awareness. There's not so much a question, but a comment from someone. I'll read it out. The external world makes you feel incomplete and small with some choices which didn't go our way. Your way. It may be the case for a longer period of time before things change, like going through this sense of low self-esteem for years can lead to depression eventually. You start taking treatment. What can we tell ourselves to heal ourselves, even though externally people continue to look at you with doubt, suspicion, and questioning your life? Yeah, interesting question, isn't it? Yeah, because as we've been behaving or been under an influence for a while, then of course people's vision then becomes more fixed in that way. So you've got the internal thing, plus you've got the force of other people's vision.
Yes, that's a really good one, and something I've also come to learn for myself and from others around me is that I need like-minded people. If I am on the journey of uplifting myself and wanting to come out of the old habits, and I'm determined to do this and I want to do this, then I need to surround myself with others like that. And that doesn't mean to say I have to leave everybody else in my life, although it may for some, but definitely I need a community or some people in my life where I can walk that path together, that I can share my concerns and I can share my learning. I can share my learning and they will say, ah, yes, now this is a great insight. Thank you very much. And suddenly I am sharing empowerment. Or I share my learning and they say to me, you know, this is fantastic, Sarah. And actually, because I'm walking just a little bit ahead of you, I remember when I was there. And look, here's a top tip for getting a little bit further. So definitely I need to, if I can't get them physically at the minute, if I can't meet people physically, then somewhere like this, online with like-minded people, reading things which are uplifting, not necessarily about what I'm concerned about. So let me not go on a forum which is talking about addiction, for example, but let me go on a forum which is talking about freedom. And of course, the two are, you know, possibly connected, but I risk being pulled back into just thinking about that thing that I am trying to get away from. So always, you know, let me always connect with a community which is looking at higher order thinking. Yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you. Just while it's in the mind, there's a, as you mentioned, the Raj Yoga course, which really kind of reinstates people into their original self-respect. So the dates, we have actually got one starting soon on the 13th of August.
Oh, great.
And it's from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and there's four sessions. So one day after the other, two days per week, sorry. And it's 13th, 14th, 20th and 21st. But yes, website is got everything on it. So do go there and take a look. One other, maybe you've got time for one more little question.
Okay, yeah, great.
How can you stop anxiety and fear during exams? So obviously, definitely a pet topic, a key question for you.
I think for me, there are several elements. One is, and this is a very broad question and, you know, possibly one that means something very different for everybody else. But the big question is, how much do I believe they will affect my whole life? So how much do I buy into the exams or the biggest thing scenario? So I'll tell you a story. Maybe that might be more useful. Well, I don't know if it'd be more useful, but I'll tell you a story. So I was a very good girl, and I was brought up, and everyone knew Sarah's a very good girl, and she's very mature, and I was. And so when I got to my high school, and in those days we did O-levels, that's how old I am. And we got to O-levels, and you were allowed to either study at home or go in for study for this sort of 6 weeks leading up to them. And they were very discerning about who was allowed to study at home. But because I was a very good girl and very mature, so I was allowed to study at home. So I never went in for that revision every day, you know. But did I study at home? No, I did not. Because I am a lover of freedom and I want a free mind and I just wanted to do my own thing. So every morning I would get my books out and I would look at them and I look at them again and I'd make notes about studying and I'd make a timetable about studying, but I didn't really study. And my mum and dad trusted me because I'm a very good girl and I'm very mature. Oh, Sarah's in there. She's got a book that she's studying. So I went and I sat my 8 O-levels and I flunked them all, except two, French and chemistry, for some random reason. And my mother cried and cried and cried because Sarah's a very good girl, high expectations. And she was very, very devastated. And all I remember thinking was, you know, I am 16 years old and I have the rest of my life ahead of me. And there is something else, isn't there? There is something else. And yes, I felt uncomfortable because I go into school and everyone's like, oh, there's Sarah. She's a very good girl and she's very mature, but she failed everything except French and chemistry. You know, there was that sort of buzz. So there was the embarrassment of walking along the corridor and everyone jumping up and down. So here's the thing. Everyone jumping up and down thinking, I got this and I got this. And I'm not doing that. I'm walking along the corridor because I'm a bit embarrassed about that. So I'm definitely acknowledging those feelings. But, you know, deep inside of me, and I put it to whoever asked the question, deep inside of you, there is so much potential, and there's so much opportunity to get that out. And I say this as an educationalist, there are other ways to show how beautiful you are and how clever you are and how creative you are. And whatever happens at 16 or 18, it is not the end of the world. And of course, maybe others will tell you that. So what I did was I thought, you know, this is a great opportunity for a fresh start. So I decided, okay, I'm going to leave my high school and I'm going to go to a sixth form college. So I went to a sixth form college and I resat all those O-levels at Christmas, plus another three. I've got about 15 O-levels, far more than I need, and three A-levels. And I excelled and I shone because the environment was right for me. And that sixth form college was a gateway to, I traveled the world. I went on expeditions. I met people I know I would never have met if I stayed where I was. And so, you know, we just never know. I was not prepared. I did not want a head stuffed full of facts, if that's what they are. And I didn't express that to anybody. I couldn't even tell you at that time I even believed that that was right or not right. I just knew in me it would be okay. And so I suppose when we come back to this, I had all these voices telling me, you know, 8 O-levels, then your A-levels, and then university. So, you know, don't take my advice. But I urge whoever asked the question, I urge you to reconsider what exams mean at the moment. In the grand scheme of things, you are so much more than what they say about you. And if you do not get them in the summer, then take them at Christmas. And if you do not get them at Christmas, get them next year. Or go traveling or volunteer. You know, if you are quite young, you have your whole life. And I suppose I can only share that from my experience. And it is the better, it is definitely the better for not getting those exams. So if you revise and you get them, good on you. You know, go for it. But if you do not get them, it's okay. I think we say Om Shanti to that.
Yes, Om Shanti. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah.
So I suppose we could say, like, become much bigger than the exams. You become bigger than the exams, or anything actually, for that matter. Okay, well, lots of thank yous starting to come in, and very, very lovely for you to share those comments. Can you share a little meditation for a few minutes?
Yeah, so how long, 2 minutes or 5 minutes?
Yeah, two to 5 minutes, however it works out.
Okay,
great. So there won't be music because it never seems to work through Zoom, so everyone can do DIY music.
Well, this is very nice because actually in Newcastle, and some of them are on our forum today here, we've been rehearsing recently without music. Mm. And it gives a very nice sense of silence as well. So that's good. So I just take a deep breath and I settle my body. And I might close my eyes or I might find a place to point my vision. And I breathe. And I become aware of the stillness around me. And I become aware that my thoughts are taking place up here in my forehead. And I become aware that I am a thinking being. And I recognize that I am a thinking, feeling being of life. And I begin to contemplate this, think about it, I am a thinking, feeling being of light and life. I am a thinking, feeling being of light and life, and inside me is huge potential for calm and stability. I am a thinking, feeling being of light and life, full of potential for clarity and understanding and learning. I am a being who is living, who is alive. And in this moment, I become a still point in a world that is moving. A vibration of clarity in a world full of confusion. A vibration of peace among all the moodiness. And I realize that by coming back into myself in this way, just for a few minutes, I can strengthen, rebuild, reassess. I can change my mind about how I react, about who I am. And in a moment, I will switch off all of this and move back to my family or go outside and there'll be noise and movement. There'll be noise and movement outside of me. But inside, let me stay still and quiet. Calm and clear, holding this vibrational space. From the consciousness of the thinking, feeling being, soul. So I take a few deep breaths to bring myself back to the room. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Thank you so much, Sarah, for a very beautiful meditation to complete your lovely sharings on the subject of moodiness. So I'm sure everyone got an awful lot from that talk, and also your presence. So yes, Ashley, the person who you were answering that question to has said thank you very much, really appreciate it. So if anyone wants to turn on their cameras, you're very welcome to now, and just give a wave to...
Oh, lovely.
That is, if you go to gallery view, everyone...
That's deeper.
Everyone... There, well, some of them. Lovely. That's nice. Oh, look, lovely, lovely.
Great.
Nice.
Thank you. Well, yes, thank you for coming and playing with me. Great.
Lovely to see a few faces, isn't it?
Yeah.
So all of you are friends. Who,
lovely Monica, yeah,
come here, and we'll do soon. We don't know when is soon because things keep changing. We think we're always going to open up, and suddenly they change things again. So, like everyone else, we don't quite know what's going to happen. But that's the way it is. So, once again, thank you so much, Sarah. And
thank you.
For zooming in from Bonnie, Newcastle. Did they say Bonnie there?
Why I, man? Why I?
Why I?
Why I?
Why I? Good. Okay, the next talk is life is a no-brainer. Oh, sorry, a good life is a no-brainer. So we've got rid of moodiness and now we're on to the good life. So so next week it's a no-brainer, and the one who's gonna speak is Minul Patel, who he does make things a no-brainer, actually. He's an actor. He's a young fellow of, how old is he? I don't know, 30-something? But he's been involved in Vajrayoga meditation since the age of 5, of course, because his mother was. He wasn't coming alone. But he's really taken it on board personally as well. And he's a singer as well, actor and singer. So I don't know if we can get him to sing to us or not. But either way, you can talk about the good life. So that'll be next week. And check out the website, because we have been putting more things on there, both in the form of more activities, but also there's more content as well. And if you go to the website under talks, not talks that are coming, but talks as in the ones which you can check out and learn more about, Sarah's one will be there by this evening. In fact, I'll be doing it just after now, a few hours afterwards. Grand. So thank you so much again, and much love to Newcastle.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Worthing, and all of it for inviting us anyway. Great. Thank you, Jasmine.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye, everyone. Okay. Have a wonderful
bye-bye.
Day.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.